And welcome to BNP Weekly, episode 136. 27th of September 2021. That was a interesting brain hiccup. Now, today we'll have Thomas Vohen joining us to talk about his role as a, what would be the right way of the
technical evangelist.
Technical evangelist. So he's a senior advisor in a consulting role in a partner company for a lot of the larger companies in Europe. And so really cool discussion. Actually, we already did it before we did this intro. Just spilling the beans here. But really cool discussion and also focusing on his career and his recommendations of being an advisor, because I think that's why there's more and more consultants, well, not more and more necessarily, but that is certainly an IT pro or another IT role which people might be interested or not. So it's not that every single person has to be a developer or an administrator, because a lot of the times you need advisors.
And I guess with the abundance of services and technology, really, even if you look only at Microsoft Cloud, it's so much that even as a company, you cannot do everything at once. You cannot enable everything at once. So with that, you need, or you could very well use advice from somebody who knows more about tech and combine it with the insights you have about business to give you advice where to start, how to set out the milestones, if you like, on journey to adopting that, for you to be able to get basically more out of these technologies than trying just to throw everything at the wall and see whichever sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, not necessarily the best approach. Throwing stuff to the wall and see what sticks. So,
depending what you want to do. Like, if you want to, what's the English word for that? You know, when there's like you, it's not drywall. Like you, yeah. Like there are some things that you want to throw at the wall and you want them to stick.
Okay.
I'm not in the construction business, so I would.
Okay, I have no idea where this intro is going. So let's actually jump on the actual interview with Thomas, and then we'll come back on the articles to cover some of the latest articles from the community and Microsoft within the past week. But let's jump on that interview. Thank you, Thomas, for joining us today for a quick chat related on your career and career path and what you're doing and what you're seeing across the ecosystem, because that's what all of these discussions are all about. So, Thomas, can you quickly do an introduction first, and let's move from there?
Sure. So I'm Thomas. I'm a technology evangelist with the Kronos Group. That's a large technology group in Belgium. It's a mouthful. I realize that technology evangelist is a little bit my MVP ship. So I like to talk a lot about technology, and I like to convince customers and the companies in our group to do something interesting with their digital workplace, let's say. So my job involves talking a lot. I got started out in this community. I think it's probably 15 years ago, something like that. I've been public speaker for the last 10 years. And for me, it all started out when I first went to a certain conference in London. And I think that Waldeck was even speaker there, even at the first iteration. I can only imagine how old you were then, because I was 12. Still quite young.
Yeah, I was 12, exactly. Yeah. So
you were probably 12 or maybe just 18. I don't know.
No, I had to tell it back then. I had to got my parents' approval to be able to do to go there.
No. Yeah, I believe that was 2009 or something. The European SharePoint Best Practices Conference in London, that was my first real conference. And I think you were a speaker there, so if I remember correctly.
No, I think my first, that was the EVO one. So there was the same crew, the same folks, but then they run the two shows. And I think that was every other year they had Best Practices and Evolutions.
Yeah. That was a very interesting conference. We can talk about that
good
conference at another occasion, maybe.
Yeah,
that for me, that's more or less where it all started out from a community perspective. I was of course busy in IT for a longer time than that, but that's when the community thing started to mean something for me. Yeah. And it's funny how I consider many of the speakers that I met there in 2009 and that I looked up to, that I consider them good friends now. It's quite funny. So that's how I got bitten by the community microbe, let's say. And I think I did my first actual public speaking engagement for myself at the Beaver User Group, which I run now. in 2011 or something. And for
That's
years,
a great story, by the way, as well. So you first went there to speak, and then now you're running the show. So
Really exactly. Cool. So they invited me, and that was Jan Thielens back in the day. He invited me to do a session. I said I'm not really sure, and I'm quite lucky that there aren't any video footages of that first session available somewhere.
Practice.
And then for years I was I think known as the as Mr. Hybrid and Mr. SQL. Those were the two main session topics that I talked about a lot, probably too much, over the years. I was always the typical IT pro, the typical on-prem guy. But of course, there is an evolution, huh? And I'm quite proud actually that I haven't really touched the new upcoming SharePoint on-prem version yet. So that's for me. That really means something. That I haven't played with it yet. I should probably do that, but still. And in the last few years, I think as a speaker, because that's my main way of interacting with the community. I don't blog that much and everything. Has been about teaching IT professionals on how to dip their toes inside of the developer world. I'm not much of a developer myself. I'm totally not a developer. I know just my way around Visual Studio Code. I know enough JavaScript to be dangerous. That means I can read what it says. Don't ask me to do anything.
I can copy stuff from internet, but I don't know.
Stack Overflow is everyone's friend, also mine.
Exactly.
So that works really well. And that was one of I think that's my main topic the last 2 years. I talk about how IT professionals can learn to use Git and GitHub and how that works. We talked about different security aspects, automating in the cloud, stuff like that. So I'm also, transitioning myself, let's say, into this new world.
Now, coming from the IT pros world and heading to the developer, learning the developer side, any good tips and tricks for the people you want to share?
Well, I think, many of my sessions are introductory sessions for IT professionals. And because I noticed that many people are a little bit intimidated by, for example, all these they're maybe not new anymore, but all the terminal windows, the black screens, all the fancy command line tools like Git, stuff like that. And IT professionals are maybe a little bit intimidated by all that wizardry, let's say. And I think it's a good opportunity to let them know that, well, these tools aren't only cool, because they are, of course, I don't have to tell you, but they also serve a purpose. Things like, well, we use version control in SharePoint every day, but what about version control for your code? And if you talk to IT professionals, we talk about PowerShell, version control for PowerShell. So
the scripts of the PowerShell, you want to store them.
And the scripts, but also how you contribute to documentation, for example, through GitHub. Stuff like that. And for many IT professionals, that's a real eye-opener because, let's say, good tooling, when it comes to good tooling, developers are always a little bit more spoiled maybe than IT professionals. And doesn't have to be like that.
Sure. There is a great, by the way, a theme, for example, in Visual Studio Code, for example, it is by far the best IDE for PowerShell creation. So
absolutely,
with the PowerShell extension on it. So sorry, Walter, just educating for those who are not aware of that. So
totally. And so another thing I wanted to ask, right, because you mentioned you don't code, but on the other hand, like, you're pretty well versed in PowerShell. And to me, that's coding. Like, you can do really advanced things in PowerShell, right? So you don't code, but then on the other hand, you use PowerShell, which is, to me, very much coding.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the first slides in my presentation around Git and GitHub. You don't think you're a developer, but you are, because PowerShell is also code.
Well, I think
we don't like to admit it, but everyone is a coder these days.
Yeah. So, and I think that's where it comes from, is that identifying people as an administrator or as a developer is wrong. It's just purely wrong. We as in Microsoft, we used to do that. We basically said, you're either in a TechNet camp or MSDN camp. Nowadays, luckily, that doesn't exist, but still the mental mindset is there. So it's we're targeting administrators or developers always, so which is highly confusing.
Yeah, the messaging has changed dramatically from Microsoft. I agree. You used to go to these conferences and it was all like IT pro, developer, two different doors, two different session rooms, and that was it. And now it's much more...
Different drinks, different brand beverages, everything different.
Different atmospheres.
Different colors.
Different colors, exactly. Yeah, luckily that has changed. And for me, I was always someone who was interested in... I'm interested in everything. That's also also a bit of a problem, actually, but okay. That's quite cool to be able to step into a session room that was traditionally for a developer audience, and that's really nice. That's possible nowadays.
Yeah, and at some point of the stage of the career, at least in the past, you were basically, it was inevitable that if you come from an IT pro, let's say, background, you needed to start learning about the developer stuff. Or if you come from the developer background, which I did, but then when I went to the MCM training, the master certification training, which doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, due to numerous reasons, but I was forced to learn then what is a server. Of course, I knew what is a server, but the deep dives of everything on that side. So, which is nowadays kind of irrelevant. Partly, but not really, because again, there's the hybrid scenarios. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's also an interesting thing because as you say, like if you grow career from being developer or admin, from being developer, you need to learn infra because like the next stage is probably being an architect, often, right? So for a developer, that means to learn everything about the infra planning, scaling, and so forth and so forth.
If you want to go to the next stage. Remember, you don't have to. Not every single person has to go to the following steps.
Of course. Well, I mean, that is the purpose of the next level, that it gives you that choice. Of course, you don't need to.
Exactly. Right? Sorry, Valdek.
But then also being an admin, coming from that area, you probably need to learn more about the code side of things. And I guess it didn't really change because the infra part is still in a cloud, right? If you build something on Azure, well, you still need to know the same thing about how things are backed up, available, scale, and so forth and so on. It's just different. Like you don't have a box anywhere you can touch. It's in a cloud. It's somewhere else already, right? But the requirements, things like network planning, all of that, is still there. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah, I agree. As a traditional IT professional, all the things you were concerned about 10 years ago, you should still be concerned about. It's not because Microsoft is
taking
a lot of, maybe not ULS logs, but still. But it's not because Microsoft is managing a whole portion of the stack that you shouldn't be concerned about your operational service management, let's say. Yeah, those things are still important. You can still lose data if you're not careful, even if Microsoft is backing up everything. All the same principles, all the same requirements that you would have or that your customer or your business has, they're still valid. So what you exactly have to do in your job shifts a little bit or shifted a lot, maybe, depends on what you were doing. But the requirements, they're still there. It hasn't changed much.
And with that is also an interesting place perhaps to ask, like, what do you see as the main concern for companies who are on a Microsoft cloud today?
The main concern, I must say my main concern is still on the non-technical side, actually, is the whole user adoption story. Everything moves so quickly. And we in this call, we it's our job to follow, right? To stay up to date. And I struggle to do that. I read a lot of blogs. I listen to a lot of podcasts to try to stay up to date at least a little bit. But okay, what about this non-technical person in the company who actually needs to get their job done? And that is still, after all these years, that's still, for me, that's the main struggle. How we can make sure that people, they have the tools, they often don't realize that they have these tools. And if they realize, how can we make sure they use those tools as we want them to use, or how do we make sure that they don't use it as we don't want it to use? Yeah. So that's my main concern. And of course, I'm a techie. I'm very much interested in everything technological, of course, but I don't think that's the main concern anymore.
That's actually a really good point. And that's basically, that's where the partner opportunities lies more and more also, because I think that's, we within this podcast, we've been having discussions with a lot of the partners and a lot of the people who've seen this transition to the cloud, and where we basically went for a $500,000 or $2 million projects all of a sudden to a smaller ones. But then the change management is the key. It's actually a huge problem even for Microsoft to provide some transparency, is that as you're buying an E3 or E5 or whatever, you're buying a certain set of services. But if we see that the customer is not using some of those services which they're already paying for, we really want to go and educate them on the value that we're providing, because why would they renew? Why would they renew their contract or buy them in the future if they don't consider that as a viable thing? And that's where the partner ecosystem is really the key, because we don't scale and we're not intended to scale. That's why we have the Microsoft partner ecosystem to scale worldwide.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, if I talk to customers, they always tell me, yeah, we have an E3 license for everyone, but Microsoft still wants us to use E5 and they want us to scale up to E5, but we don't think we are using everything to the fullest yet. And say, I think you're right. That's a little bit more on the commercial side, but that's the reality. And people do not use everything they can. So.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess there's also this other thing, right? Like, yeah, sure. So in E3, like if you look over the course of years, E3 has grown a lot. Like there are so many things in there. And sure, maybe you don't use everything in there, but you need to use, right? And maybe there are some elements in E5 that even in E5 you won't need everything, but maybe there are the few things that you actually need from E5, right? So it's challenging because you might make the argument like, well, yeah, like we don't even use everything from E3, so why go to E5? But is that the right reasoning? Because like, will anybody ever use everything that they have available in E3?
Sure.
Probably not, because it's so much and it will only be more and more and more. And you don't need to use everything in order to work efficiently and effectively, right? So maybe there's different way that we need to look at that, like how customers can get more value out of the license that they buy without having to look like, hey, do we tick all the boxes or not?
Yeah, exactly.
But again, that's from my perspective, again, that is a huge opportunity for consultants. So customers, it's not like especially in Europe, and we know that this podcast has been and the video is being listened by people across the world, but especially in Europe, like Thomas knows and Waldeck knows, companies don't have IT anymore. Everything is outsourced. So it's not in their responsibility to be the up-to-date and latest and greatest on what's being offered and what's the possibilities. That's why they have outsourced that, so that the experience and expertise is from the consulting and partner companies, so that they can go from them and the trusted advisors and ask,
what should we use? Yeah, what exactly. should we use, and what should I don't use? What
not and the
use,
answer, and what it should depends, I right?
And that's why it's a consulting play.
Well, that's the usual consultant's answer, but it's very much true. It always depends. And I know sometimes that's a little bit of an easy answer, but it's still true.
Well, I mean, the answer stands as long as it follows with or you follow with something. It depends. If you want to do this, then do that. If you want to do this, then do that, right? And I guess that is a partnership between the person who comes with the answers and the customer to have the dialogue, right? The customer needs to tell them like what business they do, what are their objectives, struggles, and where they want to be. And only then they can get these tips with regards to what system to use, how to set everything up to really get everything out of it as opposed to deploy teams and you're good. Well, I mean, you enable things, but that doesn't mean anything. Like every day you turn on PC. Does that mean that you're working effectively now? Well, not really. I mean, you have all the tools, but then is the next step, right? To actually use them for your benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to come back to the let's call it the end user, the typical situation where someone goes to their desk every day, turn on the PC, open a very specific Excel file on a very specific location on a shortcut on their desktop every day. If you tell those people, well, there is now this web tool you could use and you should not save it to see whatever, you should save it to your OneDrive, for example, and then it all gets synced up and you've got all these benefits. You have people looking like you, to you like, what are you talking about? And it's all about all about the benefits and explaining what the actual benefits are. And that we're not necessarily making their lives a bit more difficult because they have to work a little bit different, but it also has benefits like backup and be able to go back if you have a crypto locker virus, all this stuff. But that's the hard part of being a consultant, explaining the value.
Yeah, and I guess it's also changed, right? Because you mentioned it's not about making things more difficult. It's different, right? So do you have any tips or trick you learned up along the way to help people go through that change?
Yeah, my main tip, I think, if you look at the broader organizations where these people work, is don't throw everything at them at the same time, because there is so much. I know some people have a different opinion on that. For me, it's like, okay, introduce things gradually and be happy that they are already working with Teams. And if they're only using the conversations in Teams, okay, that's fine. Let them be accustomed to working in another way. And then maybe introduce OneDrive, maybe introduce then something else, more structural way of working in SharePoint, if that's necessary, stuff like that. So come up with some kind of, it's a real typical consultant's word, but the roadmap on how to implement and when to implement stuff when they are ready, because not everyone is helped by giving everything at once. Here is this great Office 365 or Microsoft 365 suite. We're okay now. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it's almost like the same classic example that there's a lot of product manufacturers who invented something like this way before Apple, but people were not ready. People were not mature enough. They were not accepting that the technology, or maybe the experience wasn't that optimal. But again, that's gradually, whenever the organization is ready, we can then introduce additional level. And that's where stuff like maturity levels and all of that stuff can help. I think a lot of the consulting companies have their own ways of dealing and selling the idea.
Yeah, we also have something similar, but from a platform perspective, it's not always easy, right? Because it's not easy. You can't just turn off certain things. So you should always educate your users. Like, okay, we know there is an additional icon, and we know that you've been on YouTube, and you know what it does. But please, we want you to look at this this or that way. So
When you implement a roadmap, right? Who is the partner for you on the customer side? Is it CIO, CTO? Is it the internal comms? Who is the partnering side of it for you?
Yeah, a lot of it, again, depends on the company, I guess. But many people, especially if they're coming from the IT pro side, they are always they always had contact with the company through the IT department, and that's not the way to go in this case, right? So you have to involve everyone, the key business, let's call them stakeholders, the people who actually know how people are working in the company. Which problem are you trying to solve? Because that's the main question in everything we do as consultants. Okay, technology is a great answer, but okay, to which problem or to which question? Is it about improving efficiency? Is it about being more secure? Is it about, I don't know, reduce IT spending or get rid of that your own data center? I don't know. It again depends. But definitely don't just talk to the IT department. I've been guilty of that mistake myself a few times already. Even if I already told everyone not to do that, you end up at a certain angle at the customer, and sometimes that's the wrong angle. So, talk to everyone.
Now, Thomas, as you're kind of a senior advisor role or a helping customers in the senior level, if there's a younger person who's just arriving to the IT business, what are the skills? How would they get to do what you do? The job sounds quite intriguing.
So. Yeah, it's again a difficult question. First of all, if you want to be an advisor, you have to be prepared to be a generalist, I think. At least in my case, I used to be a specialist. Like 10 years ago, maybe on hybrid and some other technologies. But you have to be prepared to be a generalist. And in order to be a generalist, you have to be curious. I think that's one of the main, and we can talk about passion and being curious, but I think that's one of the most important aspects of your personality that you should have. Otherwise, you will not be able to advise customers on the broad ecosystem that is available. So having a passion for technology, I don't say that you have to work 24/7 or you have to be involved in technology 24/7. Absolutely not. But well, you should, in order to be a good generalist, you should read a lot, try a lot, play a lot with the different kinds of technologies, different kinds of stuff. So that's, for me, that's the passion, the curiosity. That's the most important aspect. And of course, if you're really starting out and you're just out of school, getting to know the platforms itself is of course important. But there is so much to learn. And I think in the beginning, you will be a little bit intimidated, I guess, because there is so much. Well, pick your battles and start somewhere. I know it's easier said than done, but
Now you said something actually, which just threw me a question or train of thought. Now, is it more unfair right now for the new people arriving to IT versus us who's been here as the dinosaurs growing together with an IT? Because at the time, there wasn't this much of different technologies and options and everything else, which on the other hand is super interesting. There's so much. But then again, if you come as a new person, that seems quite overwhelming, most likely.
Yeah, exactly. And when I started, I started out as an exchange administrator, actually. So what I did was I landed my first IT job. I didn't have an IT background, by the way, but that was still possible. Well, it's still possible now. I landed an exchange administrator job. And what I did was I went on a 5-day course, Exchange Administrator 101. I don't know what it was. And, well, you maybe read a book and, well, you're now the exchange expert, right?
Exactly. Make it happen.
Make it happen. So you're now the expert. You followed the course. So, yeah. The whole course aspect is a totally different dimension. I also think that has evolved a lot because just sending people on a course for a few days will not cut it, probably. And there is so much, so you have to start somewhere. And you're right, there is so much. There is a lot of YouTube channels. There is enormous amount of podcasts and websites and personal blogs and community blogs like the PNP Initiative. There is so much information to consume. But yeah, you can't read everything. You can't be involved in everything. So I think pick your battle and start somewhere small. And if you are really into this community thing, well, start contributing back. And that's also a really important topic. If you wanna, one of the best ways to broaden your knowledge is to dive into one topic and get to know some other people, talk with them. Get to know each other, meet each other at conferences or online, and the learning will be almost automatic, I would say.
That kind of a thought. I'm hitting the 15 years in Microsoft quite soon, and I've been trying to figure out if I will write a blog post. And one of the things in the kind of a notes on what I would say for the younger person, and one of the notes there is be forgiving by yourself, which says don't try to be perfectionist, to understand that you just did no way for knowing any of the stuff, and then give yourself room to grow. One step at a time, just learning.
And everyone makes mistakes. So
exactly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I made many, many very, very expensive mistakes.
Who didn't?
Already, so
who didn't?
I can admit that.
Yeah. Well, but I guess it is exactly that. And I don't think that the things have changed, right? Because like, even if you think about in the past, let's say 2007, right? So exactly that. I went to a U2U course about MOS 2007, and I got in a week the whole breadth, like from WCM to platform to BDC, everything. Was I a master after a week? Absolutely not. I had the overview that would allow me to go deeper, but I didn't know by far everything. And I mean, even then, you had what? You had SharePoint, you had IIS, ASP.NET, SQL, and then you would have all the load balancing, scale management backups. Like, there was a lot already. Now, if you look at it now, well, all of the hardware things, like if you are in a cloud, all of that is gone, right? You don't need to worry about SQL, about capacity planning, because like all of that is managed for you by Microsoft. But there are some other things to take into account, like all services that we have available, like Power Platform, SharePoint, you have Viva, you have whatever, everything, right? So
and now the dependencies we have between them and
exactly. And then answer to like, okay, so we have Teams, email, Yammer, which one do we use and when and why? Like that, right? Because now we have abundance of tools. And the question is, which one do we choose, right? So I think like the argument stands. It was a lot. It's still a lot. Now, maybe we have now quicker pace of changes, which means you need to like do a little more work to stay on top of everything. But I think the scale of things you need to know, especially to cover the breadth, is still there. It like that aspect didn't change. It just moved from one field to another.
Yeah, exactly. I try to, if I look at my own job and my own competences, I try to follow everything that is within the Microsoft 365 realm. So like from Windows 10 deployments to SharePoint to Teams. And I'd like to be on top of the Power Platform too, but I made a decision. It's too much. You have to choose your battles. I try to be involved with the Power Platform so I know what's going on there, but I will never, well, not at this point, I will never be a Power Platform architect or whatever. So it's good that you, and again, that comes back to being a generalist. It's good that you can talk with some amount of authority about the different components, but I will never be a Power Platform expert. I've made that decision and you don't have to worry. You have to choose your battles. And if you get older or the longer you're in the industry, you realize that you, well, that it's important to know what you don't know. That's also,
yes.
I know that very well, but I don't
what was it? Know what you know what you don't know. I never confused those two.
The difference, exactly. Yeah.
In the beginning of your career, you might be tempted to say, okay, I've read this book, I've been to the course, I did my first project, I'm the guru. You're probably not the guru. And it's normal. It's normal.
Yes.
I've been in that situation probably. Some years ago.
I think that's part of growing up and expertise, getting more, let's say, understanding the world more broadly, and then realizing that, well, okay, maybe I'm missing an area. So.
Yeah, there's a little bit more context to everything than I thought initially.
Exactly. And that's fine as well. We all learn one step at a time. So that's completely fine. But cool. Now, Thomas, we don't want to take too much time off your time as well. We need to stick on the schedule. This one was really good. Anything wild, like what you were like just about to ask the one question, which is that?
No. Like we asked about everything already, and as you said, like we learn a lot. Like a lot of that comes with age, and it takes mistakes for you to be able to learn on that and reflect on that. So I guess like that is the like if there's one thing. Probably all of us would share with the younger self is exactly that, like patience. Things aren't black and white, and like there's always nuance to things, and you cannot know everything.
That's a great summary on the discussion with Thomas. So
TLDR.
Thomas, yes, thank you for joining. It was really good to catch up with you, and we'll certainly invite you back in 100 episode forward or something like that. So catching up on things. It's really cool.
Was a great really being here. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
And next we'll flip into the articles to get a wee and Waldeck on this episode. So for those who were just here for listening to Thomas to discuss and his wisdom, now you can actually close up. But thank you, Thomas, one more time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
So really good chat. It was good to catch up. We haven't seen each other. Well, I don't think anybody has seen anybody else for a long time physically. So, but we used to always see Thomas in the conferences in the past as well. So I think he's coming also to the European Collaboration Summit, which at least in Europe seems to be the big one. And of course, in the US, the next big one will be the
Collaboration,
name?
The North American Collaboration Conference in Vegas, I think. Yes.
Yes, exactly. That one. So I'm still having a debate on if I'm going to go there or not. So let's see how the flight situation continues to evolve. So, but let's see. Now, let's do some articles. We don't have a massive amount of articles for this week. But we wanted to, which is not necessarily
bad. We do have some.
Yeah, we have some. Now, first of all, we wanted to cover the Viva Connection Public Previews Now Available announcement that was done last Monday by Brad McCabe. He's a director, marketing director for Viva Connections. And we have updated the documentation. So a few weeks back, we already announced that this is coming. Then people were starting to see functionalities lighting up on their tenant. And that's a completely natural thing because stuff gets kind of rolled out in circles, in what are those? Rings. Thank you. Almost the same thing, see? Now it's fully enabled worldwide. So people can basically enable the Viva connection in their tenant. And there's already documented guidance available. So first of all, if you go to the docs, just to call out this, there's the overview on Viva connection preview. And then in here, if you go all the way down, there is a step-by-step guidance on provisioning Viva connection. So clicking this one, and voila, we are in the separate article where we actually go through step by step what's actually happening and how to set up things and how to do the important stuff like designate a home site in SharePoint, because that enables additional features for the Viva connection. So it's important to do that. So you'll see all the opportunities and possibilities which are available.
And with that, also, there's the most important part. You no longer need to build your own app, right? So in yes. preview or the originally, there was a PowerShell script you had to run, build your own. None of that is needed. So all of setup you can do now in UI, which is
like it should be,
which is easy to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's the intention. We wanted to make it more streamlined for the administrator to basically just enable that available within your tenant. And it still has the same configuration options. So you can configure the custom icon and name and all of that stuff, but you're using a UI to make that happen rather than PowerShell. Now, the other articles, so not much from the Microsoft side of the house this week. I think we're starting to wait for the Ignite coming pretty soon, and there will be other announcements as well. Jeff Dieper was actually teasing a lot of announcements for this week in his Twitter earlier today or yesterday, Sunday. But a few updates. In October 23rd, related on the collab Benelux, Belgium and Netherlands, right?
Yeah, no looks.
So, fair point. Good point. You have to, okay, never mind. So that's happening in October 23rd. And I think there's already a set of speakers selected here as well. So it seems like a really great remote session. Some familiar faces and names here for sure. So cool stuff happening on that side. And that is a free conference organized by Thomas. So it was to visit our Intercall today as well. Now, there was an article from John Liu, Bar CSV True Code Empower Automate Custom Connections. So is it then it's not no code, it's low code, but then parsing. Anyway, just playing with the terminology. But basically running how to define the different rules, and in this case, using regex to define the match pattern. And what's great explanation on how regex actually works. I don't know. that looks pretty horrible. Those people who can read it, they absolutely get it, but it's really, really, really hard to understand how it actually works. But it's insanely powerful. So in many cases for validation of things. That looks like that. But
it's hard. I mean, like with anything else, it's hard until as long as you don't know it, and then you know it, and then it isn't, right? It's
exactly.
Like, it requires time. Like you don't learn it by yourself.
Absolutely. But cool article from John Liu, and great to have John Liu actively again blocking and actively a part of the community. So welcome back. Now on here from Laura Rogers, SharePoint custom list templates, and a good story and good blog post related on that one. So how do they work? How to get started? What are the PowerShell commandlets on things to happen. Always notice we're pushing out always the latest version of PowerShell commandlets on a monthly basis, typically last Friday of each month to PowerShell Gallery. So that's why we want to do the update module. So it's actually posted on the latest version, which will then make sure that you have all of the needed commandlets available. But a lot of great blog posts, and there was a video as well, where they're actually showing off how things are working in practice. So really cool stuff. Now, Cameron had a nice blog post related on how to use Microsoft Graph SDK Chaos Handler to simulate Graph API errors. And basically, we did talk about this one with Cameron when he was a visitor in the show, didn't we? We did.
No, we talked about, I think we talked about him in an article that we had with three of us.
Ah, good point. We didn't record that call. That's good. That's good point. Yes.
Spilling the beans.
Yes. Yeah. So that was the partner call and discussions. But yeah, really good discussion related on how can the partners basically do testing of what if there's a network connectivity issues, what if the service is starting to behave badly, what if something's happening, unexpected situations happening. And that's basically what this blog post is all about. So how can you do testing and validation that your code is flexible enough to make things happen? So really cool stuff. Really, really great blog post for sure, and super useful for a lot of the other partners as well. And then from Agnes, BMP Modern Search Filter Web Part. So basically how to get started on using the BMP Modern Search Filter Web Part for providing filtering for the results. So how do we do connection between these web parts? This is actually three different web parts, which are then being added on a page to create the enterprise search experience. And then how do you associate them between each other? So so really, really good blog post as well. A lot of pictures and explaining how things can be done and how you can configure what are the filters available for the search filters. Super powerful. And these are one of the most widely used SharePoint framework solutions out there worldwide. So which is really, really cool. So people are using BMP Search Modern Web Parts quite widely. Now, this one is from Siddharth Vakasa, using a font awesome icons in Power Apps. So really cool story as well. So how do you modify the Power App Canvas application to extend it to have additional icons and additional things to be available? So super, super cool as well. Having a custom font is quite a typical request. So this basically walks through how to do those in practice and what are the additional settings. So really cool stuff.
Cool.
And then a bit older, not from last week, but close, from Tommy. Tommy, getting started with Microsoft Teams framework for building with Blazor. So basically, Tommy visited pretty recently in our community call to do a live demo on getting started with Microsoft Teams Toolkit and Blazor. And here he walks through that in the written format, which is really great because, again, not all people want to watch videos, but then not all people want to read articles. So having the both options on the story is really, really good. So the demo is really great. And this is a great walkthrough on how that was actually done and how things work. And then how to use Blazor to modify things and all of that. So Blazor seems to be really, really catching finally. It's been a while since it was announced, but now it's getting to be the maturity level of Blazor is getting to be in the right level that people are really excited of that. And why would you care about Blazor? And here's Waldeck explaining the power of Blazor.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's for ASP.NET devs. I think that is the great tech stack to combine client-side and server-side development and not have to have this split where server-side you use ASP.NET and client-side JavaScript, TypeScript. Because in Blazor, you can actually bridge that too. So there is less boundary between front-end and back-end, and you basically have a consistent development experience across the board.
Yep. Good way of putting it down. And for a lot of the server-side developers, it's the easiest, for sure, the easiest way to do client-side development. So server-side developers to do client-side development. But that's what it is. Hey. And then the last article from Janet C. Klein, Adaptive Scope Retention Policy in Microsoft 365. She's been really focusing on this one also from a work side perspective. And I love the fact that she's working actively with larger customers on these topics and then shares the learnings for others because that's how it should be. So from the real world to others to benefit out of that. So walking through the processes of how to get started and what are the steps. And the options and configurations and all of that stuff for the labels. Retention policies, a lot of stuff. I have never seen even this screenshot. So it's on Microsoft 365 compliance, which is certainly not my expertise, but really, really good blog post on explaining things. So thank you for that one. Cool. Let me actually stop that one. Anything cool happening to you this week, Waldeck?
happening
do
to
you know
me.
What's yeah
happening
have you
to
seen
me.
The future already?
yes so I have a magic eight ball. It's gonna rain the whole week, so there is that.
Yeah.
A temperature is going to drop, so yes, it is cool. on that note, so I'm continuing doing the work on new learning path for Viva Connections and how to extend it. So that is still in progress. It will probably take a few more weeks before we're ready to show anything publicly, but it is coming. So that is on the flip. Anything else? We're wrapping up the release for CLI for Microsoft 365 V4. We will probably delay it a week or two, because we realized that a bunch of the commands that we have are inconsistent. So we use different way to name options. And like on one hand, like nobody complained. But on the other hand, we see that, well, since we're releasing a major version that's breaking things already, why not use that moment and break some more things?
Yeah. You're giving yourself with an option to break things. So break more.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
To provide consistency.
So, I mean, our goal is to make it easier to use, convenient to use, have fewer headaches. Like, hey, why is it called this thing here and the other there? Where's the same tool, right? So we will probably take that shot and spend additional week or two to fix that. But it's coming soon too. Yep. And I guess these are the two biggest things on my plate now.
Cool.
What about you?
It's the never ending story, which is a great movie, by the way, from the early 80s. So, you remember that? No,
from the 80s. I know of it. I've never seen it. I know of it. I know what it is. I've never seen it.
Absolutely brilliant song on that movie. But anyway,
I know the song.
That's at
least. Will not sing it.
And here's Waldeck singing pieces of that song. Never ending stories of SharePoint Framework 1.13. So, there unfortunately there was another small delay because this, I can just briefly provide some additional transparency. So there was a fix which was supposed to get checked in, and it was delayed. I'm not kidding. 4 minutes. So stuff got delayed for an additional week. So because of the automated build systems and everything else, there's just you basically missed the date, you missed the timeline, and then
the train.
Yeah. And of course it's kind of understandable when we think about in the scale of hundreds of millions of end users every single month in a service. If you miss the train, you will miss the train. That's it. And it was a server side fix, which we need to get on the server side before we can roll out 1.13. So working
still,
on the updates on that.
But still, like in a great scheme of things, week left or right, like I don't know about you, but to me it's like it's coming. Like whether it's this week or the next week.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it provides us additional set of time to do test. Not that. No. Those who are watching this as or listening this as a podcast will be like, what are they doing?
Yeah, there was
now?
A gap.
Well, it's cool. That's pretty much the highest priority. And then I have like 200,000 incoming messages and random things which I need to catch up and clean up. But hey, that's just realities of my role. So I can do. So need to step up my game.
Good luck with that.
But all good. But thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. And we'll be back with the new BMP Weekly within a week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you.